Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Open your hearts, loosen your butts. It's time for couples therapy.
Yeah, this podcast is Andy and Naomi's, where they can both laugh and hang with all their homies, talking excellent vacationing with brunches and cuddling, to messy situationships and conscious and coupling, from Netflix hookups to single them with some Hulu, text, sex, regrets, or feeling on your new jubu. They gon' talk about it, ah, yeah, you are invited, ah, needing therapy, I guarantee, baby, we got it.
It's couples therapy.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Couples Therapy. My name is Naomi.
My name is Andy.
And we're a real-life couple.
A real-life couple of comedians.
And on Couples Therapy, we answer a couple of different questions from a couple of different listeners.
That's true.
I was just about to say that's true, but actually, lately, we've only been doing one question, but that's because the tea has been piping hot.
Yes.
The details have been so rich with our interviews. We're sitting down to talk to people. I'm like, wait a minute.
And
I
also
need more information.
Many of our guests have boundaries and are like, I can't do this for
right.
For
they did say
hours.
I have to go. They did say I do have to go. I do have other engagements.
This is not you made know. It weird. All right. I got an hour, maybe an hour 10.
Yeah, they got hard outs. Okay. Hard outs in our line of work.
Right. Right. Yeah. Sorry, I was in my head a little bit. I was thinking about our new neighbors are like good people.
Yeah.
And I always feel ashamed in comparison with them.
Oh, really? Do you mean like that time I got up at 11 a.m. to get my Taco Bell order and our neighbor was outside working on the porch? And so she saw a man hand me a large bag of Taco Bell. And then I had to say, I didn't mean for you to see this. I'm going through something.
Yeah. It was like you had just finished a week of 15 hour days on Mythic Quest.
That's
to
true.
Be fair.
That's true. And I had had therapy and I said, I think I want Taco Bell. And she said, you know what? Is it good for you? No. But will it really be the worst thing you could do? Also, no. So go for it. And I said, thank you. So I ordered Taco Bell.
And did it, on the other end of the Taco Bell, did it satisfy?
Whatever it is, the answer is no.
Yeah.
It satisfied a bit, but you know.
I haven't had Taco Bell. I literally think I haven't had it since high school.
There's something existential about a Taco Bell.
Yeah.
I feel like when I'm having Taco Bell, it's almost like externalizing the internal weariness, if that makes any sense. And I don't know what it is about a Nacho's Bel Grande that does that, but
it's like emotional darkness in culinary form.
Yes, it is. And I take it in, and there's something about it. It's almost like that's its own externalizing. And kind of once I do that, then I go, okay, we're done.
Right.
We've seen this emotion through to its natural conclusion. And we can perhaps shake it off.
Instead of a chihuahua, the mascot for Taco Bell, and I'm assuming that the mascot is no longer the chihuahua that it was in 1998.
Sure, that's good, Andy. You're correct.
Right. But instead of the chihuahua, the mascot should just be this like dark shadow with kind of like red evil eyes and sharp red teeth. Right?
Sure. Go on. Keep going.
That should be the mascot.
I thought you were going to say the mascot should just be like someone crying in a corner, like a line drawing of a crying person.
That's not a mascot.
That'd be a fun
plushie. Dark shadow. The Taco Bell dark shadow.
The Taco Bell dark shadow is the mascot. Okay, I see what you're saying.
It's talking to the crying person and saying, "Try."
And it's saying, "Tú quieres Taco Bell,"
no.
Which means you want Taco Bell.
You want
That's what it is. It's saying you want it. The dark shadow is saying you want this.
No, it should be.
You see what I'm saying?
It should be Taco Bell or Muerte.
Wow. I think we really hit on something. We need to go to Madison Avenue with this A-plus marketing scheme. Good Lord. But yeah, you were talking about our neighbors being good people, and that obviously brought me to my greatest shame, my last interaction with them.
Not that we're not, but just on the level of exhaustion that we're dealing with.
Right.
Sometimes good deeds kind of like are at the bottom of, of the list.
Totes.
And so I do sometimes feel morally inadequate.
Mm-hmm.
When I talk to them.
Well, that's okay, because you could just lie. That's what I do. I just lie about what I'm doing, and then it'll seem fine. I don't know.
Hold on. Does the lie... Let me start. It's one thing to lie to another human being. That doesn't... You don't fool yourself with the lie. The moral inadequacy is inside. It is not externalized.
Correct, correct.
Right? I'm not ordering from McDonald's mm-hmm. to fill in the moral inadequacy in my heart.
Correct.
Right.
Correct.
It just lives there.
Right.
So
sure.
A lie, first of all, a lie just adds to the moral inadequacy because it doesn't.
I mean, you said you were ashamed. How else are you getting rid of your shame around them? Because you're saying you're ashamed when you talk to them, which means when you talk to them, you have to tell them, you have to say something different, and then you won't feel shame.
No, I don't. I just I live with the shame.
Well,
how do I do it?
That's on you then. If you're just living with the shame,
midnight potato chips. Uh-huh. That's where it is. Yeah, yeah, that's my version of your Taco Bell is my midnight potato chips.
Right.
The next day, I just do an hour on the exercise bike to make up for the midnight potato chips.
Right. Midnight chips.
Yeah.
Midnight chippy chips.
Yeah. So okay, Naomi. Before we get into today's episode, a couple things. I've not listened to any of this stuff, but I saw Mimi had populated the spreadsheet.
Love when Mimi populates.
Mimi, we love you, period. But we love when you populate.
Andy, I don't like you saying that in a whisper. It just sounded wrong.
Hate to see you go. Love to see you populate.
Oh, Lord.
So I noticed that on the spreadsheet is a bunch of comments and updates.
Yep.
Sure, and I haven't listened to this yet, but this first one I wanted to play, this was a comment from the 300th episode. Do you remember?
I'll never forget it.
I believe it was Jason Manzoukas's question.
Yes.
Where a listener from Sweden was like, I came in drunk.
Acted a damn fool
drunk
in the
from
meeting.
The last night going out. And I think I'm going to get fired. What do I do?
Well, how should I handle it? And then I told them it was my medication. And then it was like...
Just kept lying.
Yeah, but just like more and more. Exactly.
Lie. So someone called in. They have their own suggestion.
Hey, y'all. My name is Alex. Pronouns he, him. I'm not going to ask for advice, but to respond to some advice. So for this drunk Swedish person that went to work after being out all night, I know you don't work. I do. I don't work in corporate Sweden, so I don't know what the rules are over there. However, if you are drunk at work, it signifies to your work in HR that you may have a substance use issue, and a lot of companies cannot fire you or discipline you because addiction is seen as a disease, right? So definitely do not resign. Definitely don't admit to anything. I know that was the advice that was given. Usually good in corporate situations, not so much. Deny. I don't remember. Whatever lie you told, you better follow through with that. But do not resign and definitely don't write a letter that you and all that. Okay. That's my advice. Hope this and not too late. Take care, y'all.
That was the most American.
I love Alex.
The most American
Alex
advice.
Said, deny.
That is the most American.
No, but I understand why he's saying that though. I do see the point of view. Of like, well, first of all, I understand what he's saying about addiction being a disease. I feel like Sweden, considering they give people free healthcare over there, I would think that they would also see addiction as a disease and therefore maybe not fire someone. But the idea of deny is because. It's all about having plausible deniability so that you don't end up broke on the street.
I don't understand this. How is it that there are so many like fucked up offenses you cannot get fired for, and yet employers will find very basic reasons to get rid of someone?
Right.
How is it that like, oh yeah, showing up at work drunk, well, technically you've got a substance abuse problem, so we can't fire you.
Yeah.
yet but someone like puts the wrong paperclip in the wrong bin.
Right.
And just like, get this fucker out of here.
But this is the thing, though. You say like, hey, I have a substance abuse problem. And this is what Alex was saying, too. Like, whatever lie you said, commit to it. Because if you're going to say that, you better be committed to going to a damn 12-step program. Nobody better see you drinking outside of work. You can't be hanging out, running these streets. They better not see you on Instagram posting. Like,
you better get that Finsta up and
that's going to be it. If that's going to be the area you're going, if that's the road you're going to go down, you got to stick to that road the whole way. You better be walking in with a 90-day coin, okay? That's what you're going to have to do, a 90-day kroner. Okay, you're gonna have to do something.
So
to get through
so in Sweden, it's just the money. It's first of all, it's not a euro. It's
no,
right.
It's a kroner.
It's a kroner.
It's a kroner.
So they just take regular old coins and then scratch like the word, the letters AA.
Andy,
on
why
it.
Are you picking it apart? I said what I said
with a knife.
I said what I said.
Like the leader of the meeting has a knife there. They're just scratching it on there.
It is done in advance. You ain't scratching in the meeting. You scratched before you got there.
We could update. I have a feeling we might not find this to be a positive update.
But you know what? We ask for updates, and that means we're open to whatever that update entails.
That is true. That is true. Okay, here we go.
Hi, Andy and Naomi. This is Emily calling from Portland. I called in November. Oh, pronouns she, her. I called in November during the teacher's strike and asked for some advice then, and you asked for an update. And, you know, naturally, as a teacher, here I am in March with an update. Very busy. Anyway, I felt like the strike was maybe not worth it. I feel like it kind of separated us from our community and pitted the district and the teachers against each other and kind of lost trust in our families. And ultimately, we did get a raise. But now the district is saying because we've raised the teacher's salaries, we can't pay for these positions. So they're cutting student-facing positions, and they're cutting special needs support, which is the main reason why I was striking. Mm. So I do feel like there's a really intentional destruction of public education right now. And it's like working in any broken system. I kind of have to keep my focus on the students in front of me, but realize that I'm trying to mop up an ocean and I can't hold the burden of the system on my back all the time. Well, that's my update. And I'm going to go enjoy my spring break. Thank you so much for your supportive words during a hard time. I'm going to continue to work in this broken system and keep my focus on the kids. Bye.
If I can get on my soapbox for a second, Naomi.
Get on it, sis.
This is not the strike's fault. The strike got you the raise. They were going to cut those positions anyway, and they were going to figure out some kind of reason to cut them.
Well, they always want
to. And now they're just blaming the strike.
Right, because what they don't want people to think the strikes work. They don't want people to think that collective action is effective. So anything that goes bad, blame it on the strike so that people are less inclined to do it again. But I think you know that because you're smart. I think, however, that, as you said, you know, you went in hoping for support for special ed, and that's like one of the things they gutted. So you feel like you took this time and you're away from the students you care about so much, and you still didn't get the support you needed ultimately. And that does fucking suck.
Yes.
And I'm not going to say that don't suck whatsoever. Yes. And I'm so sorry. But at the same time,
those fuckers were going to do that. They were going to do it, strike or no strike.
Exactly.
And now you have higher salaries for everyone.
And I think that when you say some of the relationships between the school and the district, I think that kind of stuff can be rebuilt over time. I don't think it has to be, you know, the relationship forever. But I also think more than anything, as you said, it's like you worry about the kids in front of you. You take care of the kids in front of you. And I hope that you spent spring break doing as much relaxation as possible, refilling your well, because you are showing up for these kids in such a wonderful way. Because I remember your question was like, I'm striking, but I want to be there for my students still.
Right.
It's like, so you're already like, so you're already giving so much of yourself. And so I think that I just hope that you had a spring break that was like restful, rejuvenating. I hope you didn't have to eat Taco Bell, that it didn't get that dark
or
for you,
midnight
sis.
Potato chips.
Or midnight potato chips. I hope it didn't get that dark.
I hope you had a healthy way of channeling this.
Yes.
But collective action literally will be the only thing that saves us.
Yeah.
I not just wholeheartedly believe that, but I think there is good evidence that that is the true path forward for humanity as a whole. Right. That is the only thing that will save us in the coming darkness.
Yeah. Damn, Andy. Shit, the coming darkness. God damn it. Then he wonder why I be sleeping most of the damn weekend talking about the coming darkness.
No, no, no. That's the new Taco Bell mascot, the coming darkness. That is, that's its name. Okay?
Yes, absolutely. Speaking of sleeping, just got to obviously plug my upcoming Netflix The Joke Festival show, because it is Wednesday, May 8th at 10 p.m. 10 p.m. That's late as hell, Naomi, you may be saying to yourself. Guess what? I agree with you. So you know what? We got to show up anyway, because sometimes, you know, you agree to something. And you have to honor your commitment.
Sometimes you agree to something and then you look at the contract and you go, what, 10 p.m.?
It was written in literally 8-point font. When I tell you it was 8-point font, and when I tell you I literally was like, how would anybody who knows my comedy ever think that this was acceptable? Do you know how many young comedians could do a 10 p.m. Wednesday, no problem? Do you know how many TikTokers, kids with 90 million followers of crowd work, could fill up a 10 p.m. room? That's not my ministry. That's not my ministry. My ministry is 7 p.m. My ministry is in bed by 10.
You need to pull Maria Bamford where you're doing shows at like, you know, 3 p.m. in the afternoon.
God, I would love that. It would be, you know, I would call it too. It'd be like beat the traffic comedy. And it would be like, you're not getting any rush hour with my show. But it is Wednesday, May 8th at 10 p.m. And Aparna Nancherla will be opening for me, my sister in the struggle.
Everyone should wear pajamas and masks.
Masks required, pajamas encouraged. That's the vibe. And also, and if you do not live in Los Angeles, if you are a member of the Patreon, on April 28th at 3 p.m. Pacific time, 6 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Central, I don't know where you live, I will be doing some stand-up on the Patreon via Zoom. It's not going to be tight. I think I'm going to be kind of talking through, walking through stuff. So it's more of a workout time. There'll definitely be some stuff you've heard before if you've come to a Patreon stand-up, but if you like to join, if you know, I appreciate seeing your faces. I appreciate having the audience and you taking the time. And so again, if you want to be a member of the Patreon at patreon.com/couplestherapypod, that's just $5 a month. You get 2 bonus episodes. In this case of this month, you also get a stand-up preview. So yeah, come through, join us.
It's like Jesse's Good One podcast, but in the part before you get to the podcast, where you're just figuring out the jokes.
Yes, yes. Putting it together, sure. Make that. Does that mean anything to you, listener? What did you just say? Now.
Great episode today.
We got a great episode with a friend.
This is Emily Heller.
The one, the only Emily Heller. You have already heard her dulcet tones, okay? Emily's a stand-up comedian, actor, an Emmy Award-winning TV writer, Hattie. She's written for Barry, Search Party, The Great North. She does it all, and she is currently co-hosting the podcast, What Is a Jeopardy Podcast?
Hell yeah.
And it is a comedy podcast about Jeopardy. It's all there in the title. And
I think the only. So, listeners, if you want to hear a podcast about Jeopardy, you got one place to go.
One place to go. Comedy podcast with Emily Heller and John Cullen. So they're comedians who are very into Jeopardy. You don't even have to be that into Jeopardy because it's a good time. Emily's a fun hang.
Yeah, it's like the Flophouse. I don't watch any of the movies that they talk about. I just have fun hearing them talk about those movies.
Exactly. So without further ado, the one, the only, the inimitable, I said it, Emily Heller.
Roll it.
Emily.
Hi.
Emily. Hello. Hey, so good to talk to you. I know.
It's nice to see you.
It is really nice to see you. I love you guys.
You're the greatest.
This is how we socialize now.
I know. Now it's like the fire. Oh, yeah. This is how we see people.
I mean, I feel a kinship to you as other COVID conscious people as well. You know?
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. I know. It's funny when you find out who the real ones are. and so it's just been a beautiful thing.
It is, because we do have our list of like, who can we count on? Who can we, say some show we sell gets greenlit at some point. Who can we hire reliably? Not just for
in the room for
not
the
just
culture.
For their comedic
Let's
talents.
Get the blacklist going. We are. Yes.
not just for their comedic talents, but also for their scientific understanding of the world and willingness to adhere to peer-reviewed
science.
Let
me be clear. I don't understand the science. That's not the situation.
But you were, I think, so I saw you. You came to Drive-In Birthday, and then we were at your house when you had a gathering. And so I feel like the last two social interactions
were just our birthday parties, which is
but they also involved you, because I was like, I don't go out much now. So hello.
Those were your last two social engagements in general, too.
No, we've done two other things because we did go out.
Yeah, we're not, but like we're not hermits,
not full on hermit, but
yeah.
I just feel like the fact that I can very immediately recall that outings I'm going on speaks to a much lighter social calendar.
I do feel like my calendar is lighter both because of like COVID caution / like other health things going on, and also just like my social battery drains fast now.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. I spend a lot of time thinking, is X, whatever fill in the variable, worth the possibility of minimum being winded walking up a flight of stairs for a couple months.
For the rest of my life, yeah.
For the rest of my life.
Well, yes, exactly. I just say, I'll start with a couple months.
Listening to your spouse complain for the rest of your life.
And then I go, no, it's not. In almost every case, I'm like, not worth
every
it.
Every so everything. Often, you're like, damn, that would be hella worth it.
And then we do that
rarely.
Thing.
Yeah.
We went, New Year's Eve, outdoors. We went to that. Like, yeah. Like,
but,
yeah.
Wait, I was going to ask Emily a question, though.
Oh, see, I want to take the wheel, but Naomi.
Okay, I just have one, and then you can take the wheel, okay? Okay, just like Jesus, you can take the wheel. We were talking about a draining social battery. Now, I know that you are writing on a show right now. You're in person. Do you feel, and I'm asking this as someone who's dealing with this, do you feel that by virtue of just being around people all day for your work, you then have less patience or energy for the socializing in other ways?
Oh yeah, I'm like, if there's like a thing after work, it's much less likely for me to make plans after work. But also just like to even like I'm married and I come home and I'm like, don't talk to me. we'll chat, but I'm like, I'm also going to take a 2.5 hour bath. And okay, that's going to be the thing that I do right now.
Yeah.
And it isn't even like my work is so chill. And there are like a lot of stretches of like working on our own in our office, and like it's not like a normal writer or like other writers' rooms I've been in where like you're just in the room and you're talking the whole time and you've got to like focus.
Yeah.
But still, it is like, yeah, being around other people is draining. I mean, it also is like energizing in some ways.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Were you drained by other humans pre-2020? Or is this something, as dystopia has really settled in America, is this a new kind of way that your body is reacting to the to the ambient dystopia?
I mean, that's like one of those like, okay, which one of these M&Ms filled this jar? Mm-hmm. It's like, no, they all did. I think probably the thing that is the hardest to sort of remember and articulate also about what makes socializing different is that like a big part of being isolated like that was that I started processing a lot of stuff internally that I used to externalize to other people. Mm-hmm. Of like, just like I would talk to people more about like what was going on, and I would also like then have like a lot of stuff to report back when I would like come home, and like it was just like a lot more sort of externalizing of how I'm doing. And then the like updates of my life ended up being things like, well, I thought about this today. And it's like, I don't even know that happened to tell someone else.
Yes.
And so I think the hardest thing that has been like adjusting after, I mean, also then it was like you get into a routine, and I was like, I actually had some like really good like habits going.
Oh yeah, I mean, hello. First of all, Emily has proper, you guys, and she's one with the earth. Okay, she's out here gardening. She's saving the butterfly populations. Uh-huh. So, like, you really did kind of find a nice area.
I found a thing, but it was like the only the thing that I was able to do was also I was just like doing stuff at the same time every day and getting like, and then now that's totally disrupted. And I've like lost all of my like organizational skills that I gained during the pandemic. I've lost all of that. There's just like, I'm just like a total mess now out in the world. I'm like, I don't know how to talk about what's going on in my life. I don't know how to verbalize my feelings. I don't know how to say, answer the question, what's up? It's like, that's like a question I don't know how to answer anymore. Yeah. And like lately, I feel like I also think like we got sort of like encouraged to indulge our more niche interests during the pandemic in a way that is not good for socializing because people will be like, oh, what's going on? And I'm like, let me tell you about the life cycle of the monarch butterfly. And they're like, what? And I'm like, did you know that their entire body liquefies when they go into a chrysalis? And it's not a cocoon. And people are like, goodbye.
Yeah. That's super interesting. But see, that's the thing. That's super interesting. I would much rather have that conversation than talk to someone at a party about, like, I really try to avoid, like, what? Yeah.
Yep, what they're working on.
Exactly. I never ask a question. And when someone asks me that question, I go, and I don't mean this in a bad way, but I'm like, do you actually want to know? Or is it just like the thing?
The question
you're
supposed to ask.
Or are you full of shit?
Like that, exactly. That, right. Exactly. Yeah, yes. I try to avoid it being... I think that I have been able to figure out how to say that in a way that's not like, you just bullshitting. Like, I think I've been like, hey, if you really want to know, I'll tell you.
You are going to be horrified by the answer. We are going to go to a dark realm.
But it's like, I don't know. I am interested in what my friends do professionally, but also, like, I don't know if I want to hear about every pitch or every, like, idea.
I only want to hear if there's, like, real gossip.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm like, tell me the unusual thing. I'm like, did someone do something completely unhinged? Then yes, tell me that part.
I want people to post their emotional deadline articles.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Yes. Breaking, Naomi finally took a shower after 4 days. You know what I'm saying?
I would also just love if, like, the next time we caught up, I could be like, so, like, which deadline article made you the most personally mad, jealous, like, bitter? Like, what are you, like, what's happening for someone else that you are not happy about? Like, that's what I want to know.
Wait, I was thinking about how you with this morning I was thinking about awards and I was like, it's so funny, like, when I vote in the, like, WGA awards, like, sometimes I'm voting for the thing I like the most, but sometimes I'm voting against something.
Always voting against something
that I have spite for.
I mean, even when I'm voting for something, it's against something as well.
Yes.
And this is something we are admitting in public. I could get my voting, because I also got to vote on the Emmys for a long time. I think I still can. I might have to pay money to, like, keep my, like, a Television Academy membership. But I was like, I would just, like, tweet, like, just, like, tell me who to vote for / bribe me right now. Like,
you have your Venmo thing right underneath it.
But then they wouldn't let me vote in every category. And I would be like, sometimes they wouldn't let me vote in, like, categories where I'm like, I actually watch these shows and I guarantee you other people did not.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Wait. Okay. So I'm curious. You're from the Bay Area, right?
Hell yeah.
Yeah. So did you grow up as a therapy person? Did you grow up talking about your emotions and things like that? Or because I get a vibe from you.
Oh, I'll tell you. Go ahead, but I'll tell you my Emily take. But you go first.
Well, I get a vibe from you that we are very similar in that we, like, repressed all of this stuff as kids.
No. I'm going to flip it, okay? I'm going to tell you. This is how I describe Emily, okay? She grew up being told she was enough.
That, okay? Yeah.
From an Emily does not come into this world apologizing for existence.
Yeah, no. Oh, I get that
they
from your
told
confidence.
Her,
like, you're a very confident person.
They were like, you are enough, okay? Somebody told Emily when she was a little girl, you are enough.
Yeah. My parents, I would get A-. I would get an A-, and my parents would be like, you can do better. And I would be like, and I could do better, to be honest. They were right, because I did no work to gain
I mean, I hear you can do better as a compliment, but... Because I would get like a B minus, and my parents would be like, great job. And
it's
I'd be
okay.
Like, hmm. Mm-hmm. But no, yeah, I was definitely like, I was raised in a very loving home. My mother is an art teacher, and so she loved every, like, when they moved out of that house, she had a filing cabinet with drawers that opened like 5 feet wide, one drawer for each of the kids, full of like everything we had ever done or made.
Oh my God.
Like, it all mattered.
Yeah.
It was very, like, it was very affirming. And also, why did you, I'm like, she kept like report cards from when I like did bad. Like, what, why did you keep this? We found one from seventh grade where my music teacher was like, Emily spends a lot of time with her head on her desk these days.
Wow.
Wait, yeah. Sleeping? Head on desk? Or
no,
like,
just
I can't
like,
stand this. Head on my desk.
Just like, I'm miserable because it's eighth, or it was, maybe it was eighth grade. It was probably eighth grade. Like, that's when I was really like, fuck this. But yeah, no, we like I didn't start going into therapy until I was like in my early 20s when I started having anxiety attacks on a more regular basis. And I like my first therapist was like a student at the school for like somatic psychotherapy in San Francisco, which is a very like body oriented, like kind of hippy dippy, but it was sliding scale. So
exactly. student does.
Yes. Yeah. Students. Yeah. And it was like, I think like through Facebook, I found out that my therapist was also like a waitress at a restaurant at Tiburon. And I was like, I feel weird about that, but whatever. But yeah, I was always encouraged to talk about my feelings and like they were validated. And like, I think also something that was just like growing up as like, with a ton of sort of privilege of like being like, I'm like a straight white, you know, woman and like cisgender. Like it was sort of like, oh yeah, I just thought I was normal. I knew I was kind of weird, but I didn't think that like my feelings were abnormal or anything. Like I could talk about the boys that I liked with my friends and not feel like that was endangering myself. And so I do feel like sometimes when I'm like, the more that like, as I've gotten older and like, I would say probably most of my friends in college were queer and like a lot of my adult friends since then. And it's like, oh, yeah, that's not something they got to do. And I would sometimes be like, why aren't you so comfortable just telling me everything about what's going on in your life? And I'd be like, oh, right. Like I've never had to worry about like being told I was like not supposed to feel that way about something, you know?
Right.
But
right. Is Bay Area weird? Like, is weird in the Bay Area not othering? Like, I was weird in Pennsylvania, and that was othering. Like, it was, including my parents were just like, I don't know, like, I don't know about what this deal with this guy is. Like,
right. I mean, it's definitely a better place, or at least when I was there, it was a better place to be weird than a lot of other places, because it was one of those things where it was kind of like, even if I was weird at my school, I would be like, well, I can find other people in the Bay Area, you know? Mm-hmm. It would be like, I can go kick it at these, like, all-ages punk shows in Oakland and find some other people that, like, are, you know, into the stuff that I'm into. Or, like, I went to, like, a summer camp that was, like, most of the kids who went to that summer camp lived in the Bay Area, and it was, like, a performing arts and circus camp, and it was, like, a lot of weird people went there, and it was like, well, I could hang out with my camp friends if I can't find anyone at my school who's, like, into what I'm into. But it was, I was never, I also, like, went to private school, too, so it was, like, I was, like, very sheltered from any serious consequences for how weird I was, which also does explain how I got to adulthood with so many behaviors that are so not acceptable to other people.
Wait, what? Like, what?
Well, just, like, I never learned how to hold in my farts.
Wait, I'm sorry. Private school didn't shame you for smelling?
I know. I know.
Wow.
They didn't shame us for nearly enough. Or just like, I mean, yeah, I think I've also like, I come off as really sort of like confident and unapologetic, but it like real, I really only learned recently that like other people apologize for stuff that I do. It's not because I'm like, it's not hard won in any way. Uh-huh. It's truly just like, I have been sheltered from the consequences of my behavior.
Oh,
that is so funny.
Like, what is there something you're comfortable saying, like that someone's apologized for you for?
Well, no, not necessarily. It's more just like I will sometimes come into like a social situation with just like my hair fucked up. You know what I mean? And no one doubts that I like have a stable living environment. You know?
Yeah.
Like things like that where I'm like, oh, it took like I know people in my life who are like, I would never go out looking like you do because there would be a question of whether I'm okay.
Right. Well, I mean, I remember, I'll tell you like why I kind of thought that too, because when you and I were in a room together, it was the first time, and you were the first person I ever saw who did something else while they were listening. Like, I think you were knitting or you were drawing, and like that room had a lot of like arts and crafts in general. But like, there'd be times where you'd be like playing a game on your phone where I was like, can you do that? Like, that's legal?
And a lot of people are not okay with me doing that.
but you do it, like, or if someone said, no one says anything to you, like, whatever it is, like, if they don't like it, I don't know if everyone has told you, but I was like, oh, and it was like, and the thing is, for me, I don't interpret that as she's not paying attention or she's too cool. It's like, you need to do something else with your hands, because I'm the same way.
Me too.
But I thought I wasn't allowed to, but the fact that, like, it was no question, it was just like, you were like, uh-huh, and then, like, you kind of be doing it, and then you would get up, you'd be like, here's a pitch that fixes everything, and then you would just, like, go back to what you were doing, and that's when I was like, oh, like, and again, not that you hadn't been in different rooms and had experience, but, like, I for me, that the ability to do that was so indicative of somebody who was not self-conscious and,
I think,
like, doing
it's,
what they needed to do to, like, it's part of what you need to do to kind of process.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's, like, I have a hard time convincing people of this sometimes, but, like, I do have ADHD, and I do know that, like, I will actually pay more attention if I have just, like, either, like, an embroidery project or, like, a game on my phone that doesn't require, like, critical thinking, that's just like a, you know, a bubble
Match
shooter
three.
Game or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Because then I will just be like, I will be engaged enough in that that I can like listen very carefully, but it doesn't send a lot of the signals that I'm listening to other people, and that can be really upsetting for certain people. But I like, I'm so afraid of spacing out that like I am sort of like, it is kind of worth it to me to run the risk to like do that. I think I also have a little bit of a very unhealthy like, maybe not unhealthy, but I guess, like, I am a little bit more of a don't give a fuck about certain Hollywood jobs where I'm like...
No, that's great. Yeah, Emily, I wanted to say, like, I admire that about you in that you are very, like, you're an adult. And this is what I don't like about in some way, this industry infantilizes you and you're just like, oh, I'm scared I'm not going to get an A from my showrunner. It's just like, you're a fucking adult. As long as you're contributing... Let me be an adult and do what I want.
Yeah. If you feel confident in your contributions, that's like, yeah. I do feel like there are definitely people who succeed, and I have a lot of respect for them, and I think that what they do is invaluable, but there are people who succeed by, like, truly being exactly what the showrunner needs them to be, of, like, always having that energy, always showing up, and, like, really affirming the pitches of other people. And, like, I wish I could be that person. I have a lot more honesty with myself that that's not what I bring to the room. And I do try to be better at that. And I'm, like, I'm really not good at, like, telling people when I love their pitches, even when it happens a lot, you know? And, like, I've been dealing with that in this current room where I'm, like, there's one writer in the room where I'm just like, I need to find an opportunity to tell him this nice thing I've been thinking about him, which is that, like, I feel like he always has the answer to our hardest problems, and I feel like he would like to hear that. And I'm like, I've noticed myself thinking this very nice compliment, and I just have not told it to him yet. And
text him right now. Right now. Text him. I'm telling you.
But yeah, I mean, it is like, it's not that I don't give a fuck about my jobs, it's just that I think I'm like, I also got very lucky in that, like, my first jobs my first job in a writer's room really affirmed my value, and also, like, affirmed the idea that, like, what you do as a writer when you work on someone else's project is, like, you offer them your talent, and that is a gift, and that, like, you don't owe them for giving you a job. They owe you for what you're contributing to this project that is more important to them than it is to you.
It was your parents over it. right? you were getting that
my
same
parents
kind of...
are, you know, what are the people who made The Good Wife, that married couple?
Oh, yeah.
No, the Kings. Or
Andy loves the Kings.
Oh, I love the Kings. Okay, I want to go back, though.
Okay, I'm really letting Andy drive.
Thank you. I want to go back to the anxiety attacks, because what is interesting to me is that Marin I has said repeatedly how he's turned showbiz into his parents, but in a negative way, like seeking yeah, the
approval,
the approval of a mentally ill and dispassionate kind of industry, right? In the same way that his parents did not give him that stuff. It seems like you're the opposite, in that the kind of like approval that you got from your parents, you've just shifted right into, you know, a showrunner, an executive, or someone like that, right?
Right. I mean, I think that I have a very different relationship with, like, if anything, I'm like excited by the challenge of like winning over a showrunner or someone, because I'm like, my parents, that was not a challenge. It's like a totally different relationship to me, where I'm like, I also really like ending up in those situations where I'm like, oh, there's someone who like I can make fun of and they're cool with it. Like, it's such a rare thing to find someone who can like take it.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, look, you're cutting. You're cutting. Okay, Emily?
I am. Oh, I'm very cutting.
You look into the heart of a person, you find their greatest weakness.
Yeah. That's what that's what scares me. I'll be honest. Before we got to know each other better.
One time, Alice Wetterlund told me that she had, like, she repeated to me a comment that she had said about me to someone else that was like, she was like talking about someone who was kind of mean. And she was like, and I was like, you can't do that. You're not like Emily Heller. You can't be that mean. And you have to also be funny. And I was like, that is harsh, but also a compliment, I think.
But this is the puzzle I'm trying
to figure
out. Yeah,
where's the anxiety?
Where's the anxiety coming? Because it seems like this is all like very, it's not that you haven't had travails.
Right. We're not saying life is a picnic, but you know, when you get that, when you don't have that fundamental emptiness.
Yes. Like my parents created a void and shoved it into my chest. Same thing with Naomi's mom.
Yeah, you have a void.
We love them all, but they did create a void for us and jam it into us.
Which is why, you know, I try so hard to be likable. And that's its own sickness.
Well, I do think that, like, there's one aspect of the anxiety which is related to that sort of, like, inability I have of, like, filtering myself, which is that, like, I will hurt people's feelings without meaning to, and they won't tell me about it because I'm a somewhat intimidating person sometimes. And so I'll find out that I've, like, ruined a friendship because of some dumb thing I said that I probably didn't even mean. And then I will freak out afterward. Uh-huh. But I also think that there's definitely just, like, a physiological component to anxiety that you can try and work backwards and be like, I'm nervous about this because. But sometimes it just comes down to, like, my heart's beating kind of fast. Or, like, honestly, when I went to go see my therapist for the first time when I was, like, 23, like, I was having anxiety attacks because I was in, like, a sort of stressful situation. But I also had an overactive thyroid. And
oh, really?
My thyroid, like, blew out. Like, I was, like, losing weight and I was, like, feeling very nervous all the time. And I was just sort of like a raw nerve. So I was like, and then now I have hypothyroidism, and like my thyroid is underactive now because it basically blew out like in that period of time, because it was sort of like a positive cycle where it was like I would get stressed out and then like my thyroid would overact a little bit more, and then I would get more stressed out because I just felt so wired, and then like it just got worse and worse. And then, you know, since then, I mean, I do still have anxiety, and I do still feel like I will get dysregulated by certain things that I get overwhelmed by. And I think ADHD plays into that, too, of like, it's very easy for me to feel overwhelmed because I know how disorganized I am. I don't have confidence in myself to like do certain things that keep my life together sometimes. And so there are certain aspects of my life that feel more precarious than, you know, they should. But yeah, I mean, anyone can feel anxiety. I also think it's sort of inherited. Like, I think my mom has anxiety. Like, she can tend to worry about stuff that she doesn't need to worry about, you know? It's like one of those things where it's like, you know, when I'm home and I like am like staying with them or something and I'll like go out with my friends, like she worries about when I get when I'm going to get home, even when I'm like 30 years old or whatever.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Anyway. But yeah, I don't know exactly where it comes from, but I also used to like when I was in high school, I used to do high school debate. And which is like, you know, I didn't personally feel like nervous. Like if you asked me, I'd be like, how are you feeling about the tournament coming up? I'd be like, I feel great about it. I think it's going to go pretty well, or, you know, but then I would get there and I would throw up.
Okay.
And I'd be like, my body knows something that I don't know. Like there's, there's a little bit of a disconnect there in terms of like how, how my anxiety relates to my consciousness that
yeah.
Did you like debate?
Oh yeah, debate rules.
Even though they like,
oh hi Alan.
Oh my god, Alan just came into the room, you guys, and that's Emily's dog son.
Emily, I was doing an interview the other day and the like I would say four or five times during the interview the animals would bust in like it was a prison break.
And I kept trying to like, you know, sneakily be under the camera and try to usher them out. I like tried to close a second door and that came undone and the cat said, fuck that. And then Mabel said, well, if he's going in, I'm going in.
I'm going in, yeah.
And I was like, I understand. But yeah. Alan is a prince, you guys.
The thing, I got roped into debate for a year because of my girlfriend and high school was in it. And I really hated, resented the fact that I was told which position to take, that I couldn't choose which one. Like, it was just like, I remember it was the thing about China and I had to be like, I forget, like,
but
whatever.
You argue both sides at every tournament.
Is that what it was?
I don't know what kind of nature of that.
I didn't like the fact that I, whatever you had to, that's the thing, right?
Yeah.
That you had to argue both sides. And I just wanted to have an opinion about something and argue it.
What I loved about debate, though, would be like you would be facing a topic where it would seem like maybe your position on it could fall under ideological lines. And if you were able to find a way to be like, what's the progressive argument against this thing that seems progressive, or like, what's the way that I can argue this that I actually believe in? Like that to me was the interesting challenge of it, was to be like, what is, you know, like, how do we actually do that? I'm trying to think of like a good example of like what that would be, but it's because it's kind of hard. But
yeah, that's why I was like China. I couldn't remember the president in 1996 of China. Yeah. That's why I like stopped there. I'm like, but like this is the thing. Like I taught logic when I was a philosophy professor, and I would teach it to the students in such a way where I was like, hey, this is not how actually people argue. Like people will use propaganda, people will manipulate you emotionally to get the thing that they want, and these are all fallacies, but that doesn't mean that the argument, you can find all the fallacies in someone's argument and they just have more power than you do, and they
and it doesn't matter. Yeah. I mean, I guess that's what I liked about debate, is like it's not teaching you how to actually argue with people, but it's giving you sort of a world where the best argument winning is actually affirmed by the adults in the room, which is so
affirmations.
Unusual. It's like, it's not like you would, how often do you actually get to like argue with someone and then at the end a third person says, you were right and you were wrong? that never gets to happen, even when you are right and they are wrong.
Yeah.
Right. I also did really love, like, I was good at debate, I think, because it's like kind of a high stress stimulating thing. And like for ADHD, it's like you need that in order to actually give a shit about anything. And it's like why there's so many people in stand up with ADHD, because it's like I need to be on like a tight rope, you know, like I need a lot of stimulate. I need to do the thing that other people are scared of. But I also, there were just so many like nerdy Republican asshole high school kids, and I could humiliate them, and that was really nice.
And that felt beautiful. That felt powerful.
Felt like, oh, just making them feel really bad about themselves, like their little bow ties, and like just all these guys who are on Fox News now just like saying all this like weaselly little shit, you know what I mean? Like, it was fun to make them feel really bad.
Yes. I'm imagining Charlie Kirk crying right now. It does feel good.
I'm like, he looks familiar in that. You know what I mean? Where I'm like, I definitely, like, this is every guy I debated who was, you know, from fucking Louisiana or whatever. Like,
yeah.
fully.
All the little like Louisiana prep school kids who would just like, yeah.
Right.
Think they're hot shit.
Sorry, honey. What were you going to say?
Well, I had a question, but if you're already on it.
Hun.
I want to hear from Naomi.
Egalitarian household.
Well, then my question, but I'm going to pivot though.
It's your turn.
So do you want to pivot or you want to stay in debate?
No. I want to ask one last question about anxiety and then
I'll ask my question.
Which is, so your thyroid blew out, and then at what point do you kind of get a handle on it?
Well, it was like I lost all this weight, and then I started gaining weight really rapidly, and so I also saw the doctor afterward, because I was like, why is this happening? And they did blood work, and they were like, you have an insufficient thyroid, and they were like, what's been going on with you? And I was like, here's what happened. I was having a lot of anxiety attacks, I was losing weight, I was really stressed out, and then all of a sudden it shifted, and they were like, well, what probably happened is your thyroid blew out. I don't know for a fact that that happened, because I guess I didn't start seeing a doctor about it until after I had kind of recovered from it in that way. Yeah, but yeah, I mean, I do still have anxiety and stuff, but like,
but do they like put you on a thyroid pill?
Yeah. Oh yeah, I take Synthroid now, and I will for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
It's like
Synthroid. Yeah. Sorry, it sounds like a
it's very RoboCop. It's very RoboCop.
I was like Data's best friend is Synthroid.
Okay, now my pivot question. I will say this, because this is a question, you know, this is what I like to do. I like to tell people what I think of them, and then either I've got to get myself out of it or they've got to like push back. But can I say that how long have you been married?
We've been married for
5 years?
What year is it? 6 years?
Okay, I'm going to tell you what I think is funny. In my mind, you struck me as somebody who like wouldn't get married until she was like 62. And it would be like very Ina Garten, this is my friend Jeffrey energy.
Oh, so, thank you very much.
You're like, I don't have time for these hoes. Like, I just feel like because you are a fully complete individual on your own, I don't think of you as someone who's like chasing, you know, like, I gotta have a boyfriend and I gotta do whatever. That I was surprised that you got not to be in a relationship, but to be physically like married. I was like, what's Emily?
Well, we didn't want to get married.
Okay, see, Andy, I sometimes have the right take.
You have like a very keen observational sense. It was Trump's fault.
Well, so many things were. Go on.
Yeah, like, go on. That's a laundry list.
Because my husband had left his job and he got, because of Trump being president, all of a sudden, all of these insurance companies started kicking people off without notice. Like, he was supposed to have like 90 days of coverage or something, and he got like kicked off. And it was one of those things where it was like they were just doing it because they knew they weren't going to get in trouble for it anymore, because he was trying to gut, you know, the ACA or something. I don't know. I couldn't figure out. It was one of those things where it was like a very direct line from Trump being elected to all of a sudden the insurance companies were doing all this shady shit because they could. And it was a situation where it was like all of a sudden he just found out he didn't have coverage. And he like went on the like Covered California website and like came back an hour later looking like he wanted to jump off a bridge. Oh, and like, and he was like, I guess we're getting married. Cause I had said, I was like, you know, we can get married if like it comes to that. Cause like I'm in the WGA. Mm-hmm. Shout out to our health coverage. It's fucking dope.
It is.
And I called the WGA to be like, hey, if I got married, how quickly would he be covered? And they were like, the day you get married. Mm. And I was like, okay. And so literally, we got married 2 weeks later.
Wow.
We were engaged for maybe like, 12 days or something. It was like very, it was very like non-ceremonious, considering that it was a literal ceremony. It was like, I called my mom and she thought I was joking.
Really?
Yeah. Because I talked about not wanting to get married, like on stage a lot. And it was like, I was like prepping to record my hour and I was like, I'm not going to tell people publicly that I'm married because I don't want them to hear this material and think that I'm like full of shit and be like, wait, I'm confused. Like, right. I know she got married. You know what I mean? Like, it was like, I overthought that, I think, a little bit. But I overestimated how much people keep tabs on my personal life on my Instagram. But like, I was like, It was a surprise to me as well, is what I'm saying.
Okay.
But now I really like being married. Like, I like it a lot more. Like, it changed my life a little bit more than I expected it to, just in terms of, like, because I was just, like, for a while I was still calling him my boyfriend. And people were like, don't you mean your husband? It was, like, the worst. Because I was like, nothing's changing. But it changes the way people treat you.
Like, yes.
That's the thing that changes. It changes.
You're now in the club.
You're in the club, but also they're like, okay, this person's sticking around, I guess. Like, I think it also, like, I think the most tangible change when we got married was that made him an uncle to my nephew. Mm-hmm. Like, he wasn't an uncle before, and then he was.
Yeah.
Because I think that's the rule. I mean, I have... I have an uncle who's like, he and my aunt didn't get married until they were like, you know, in their 70s or whatever. But I called him my uncle anyway. But I guess I didn't never call him that to his face, though.
Yeah.
It just makes people sort of take your relationship seriously.
Yeah.
I was afraid, though.
You were.
I was, because I was like, I feel like this puts a pressure on a relationship that, like, well, I think I felt like it was sending a message to other people about what our relationship was that I didn't feel was, like, super accurate. Not because we aren't, like, committed to each other, but just because I was like, I like that we can sort of define for ourselves how we build our lives around each other. Like, I know married couples who are a lot more codependent than we are, and, mm-hmm. like, I know people who are like, they never travel with other people other than their spouse. And like, I think once you get married, if you start doing that stuff, people are like, where's your spouse?
Yeah.
And
people are very obsessed. Yeah.
Yeah. People get very weird. Like it feels like it's giving other people permission to know more about how you are with each other than is their business. And I felt like I liked that we were sort of like, making our own decisions about that stuff that like, and then of course like COVID comes and it's like, no, everyone who lives together is married after COVID. You're like, you don't spend any time apart. That's actually not happening anymore.
Yeah.
That's certainly very true for us.
It's so true. It's insane. But it was also something I never really like I always wanted a partner. Definitely. I was like, really, but it wasn't necessarily like what I wanted was like to have a person, but I liked being social. I liked being separate. And apart, to me, the dream is like you go to a party, you each walk in and you go separate ways, and then you meet up back at the door. Do you know, like, that for me is like.
There was a birthday of yours at a bar pre-2020 where we went and just went separate and just had separate. That's when I first met Gabe, Parna's.
Yep.
Fiance.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And then we just talked the entire time.
Yeah.
And then you were off doing your own thing. I think we might have been even just back to back.
We never turned
the stools.
Okay, I remember that because it was like, I feel like it was like a cool downtown bar where like my perfect party location is very close to the entrance or like in the path towards the bar. So that way you were getting to see everybody, but you're not moving around.
Right.
Because you see everyone at the end.
For a bar.
I like to be stationed.
Exactly. Yes. And I remember they had really good sodas. And we were like, I was like sitting here. I said, the soda, I think there was a popcorn situation. And I just said, this is the spot. You're going to see everybody coming and going. But it's like, and there are times where not now, but I remember we had something like, Andy, let's only go to this party if we're going to like go and socialize. Cause I don't need to leave the house just to talk to you. That's my thing. Andy's less into that. He's more like, let's go just to be out there. Whereas I'm like, I don't have to leave the house. I'm going to stand in a corner and talk to Andrew.
Have this conversation with a change of scenery. The same conversation that we would have.
Exactly. And I don't want that. Because it's like, I could just be in my house with no bra and no pants. Do you know what I mean? Like a loose pant. That's like a way of much better. So like if I'm going out and I've put on the brassiere and I've attempted to be social and presentable, I have to be engaging with somebody I wouldn't normally engage with.
Right. See, I feel like I have to remind myself that my instincts about what's going to happen when I leave the house are often wrong. Of like, I don't know who I'm going to talk to there. I don't know what it means to the other person for me to show up. Like, I have to remember that there is more to it just than like, other than just like my instinct about whether I'm going to have a great time. It's like I might thank myself for doing this for things that I can't predict. And that's been the hard thing to bear in mind, because I do think like, oh, yeah, people, it is meaningful for people to for you to show up for them. And that's, I think, been something where I'm like, oh, yeah, I don't think about that, but I should.
Yes.
Yeah.
No. I'm definitely, that's a very good point. And that's something I
say this having not shown up to something last night that I thought I was going to.
I say this having not shown up to most things. Okay. Having never shown up. And it's definitely something that, you know, we talked about again, like, it's funny because certainly in New York, we were both more active seniors out and about and engaging.
Yes.
You just jump on the train and go wherever you want.
But also, like, we had more separate friends, whereas here, I think, because we moved here together and we kind of came here as a unit, we have like more joint friends. And so it's much right. more, are we doing this thing? You know,
that's a whole new thing too. Yeah. I mean, when he and I got together, it's like we had no friends in common when we met. So that's like a whole other thing too. Cause I was like, oh yeah. Like, and I was like a touring comedian at the time. So I was like, we have very different lives. Like part of why, like I was very attracted to him in the first place was like his life was very different than mine. And I wasn't going to have to like put my life aside in order to like be with him because of like, you know, his, he wasn't also traveling the world and like I wouldn't have to like, you know, it was it was just like a lot, it made my life a lot easier to be like, oh yeah, like when I'm home you are going to be like, I'm not trying to make it sound like he doesn't have anything going on, because that's
but you're both like he's got more of a routine,
right?
He's got
looking
more
at
of a
the
set schedule,
the life cycles of lantern flies together now,
right?
Yes. I mean, he's less into the butterflies than I am, but
but like the thing I was thinking earlier, and I wonder if you feel like this too, is that it's not just that people take your partner more seriously, it's that you are now taken more seriously as a human. When I said part of the club, what I meant was like, it was like there's a life path that everyone thinks you're supposed to be, one is supposed to be on. Right? And when you deviate from that, it makes them scratch their heads if they've never questioned whether they should be not.
Yeah.
And then once you do a thing, like when we got married, people are just like, all right, he's not just some freak. Now he's got a wife. Right? Now he's, or like, I have a retirement plan now. And I'm like, oh, people, not that I talk about it. This is maybe the first time I've talked about it outside of
but
Naomi,
I think
but
you
like,
also mostly mean but, your parents, but just like, yeah,
but
other
yeah,
adults.
But my parents started at, like, once we were, once we started planning the wedding, they, I don't know if this is just coincidence, but they started asking questions about my career that they had been uninterested in prior.
Interesting. Like, they were just like, oh, you're an adult now, kind of.
Yeah,
I think
I wonder.
Really felt you're an adult now. And I think that's the way people feel. I think also people feel that way, too. You know, the whole, like, when you have kids club, there's certain things that people go, okay, you're regular. You know? And that they, like, it gives them a sense almost of anchoring in sort of, like,
I know how to deal with you. Yeah. Otherwise, they have to kind of like figure you out. But if you have like a kid, they know what, like, I never, Naomi's great at this and I'm terrible at it, but like asking questions about someone's kid, I just don't know what to ask. And so it never occurs to me, but she's great at it. But I think once like you have
my questions, I'm like, do you like being a parent? I'll literally just be like, how do you feel about the choice you've made? Let's get existential with that.
But I meant like, oh, there are two. They must be doing this. And I'm just like, I don't know what a 2-year-old does. I don't remember. So like, it's that kind of thing where like, but if you have a script or just like a vague kind of like a Curb Your Enthusiasm type script where it's kind of basically
some bullet points, some general
beats. Well, it's like filling in stuff on the back of your trading card, like areas that were just left blank. All of a sudden there's some stats there that people are like, I kind of know how to make sense of that.
Yes.
It's like, I've talked to people too who are like someone who I like was loosely acquainted with who had gotten divorced relatively young, but he had gotten married pretty young too. And he basically said like, well, yeah, I basically got married because I wanted people to take me seriously as an adult. Like I felt like people thought I was kind of just like an unserious idiot. And it was like a way of being like, hey, like I'm an adult.
Mm. Wow.
And it was like, not, he wasn't ready.
Right.
But he did it because he was like, It carries so much for people. Like, there's so much meaning wrapped up in it. And I think submitting to what other people's meanings are of it is the thing that makes me the most nervous. And so, but I think now I'm a little bit more comfortable with, like, with people making those assumptions about me just because I feel like I'm fit them a little bit more than I did when we did get married in the first place. But that's also just because I'm like not a touring comedian. Like my life looks a lot more like a normal married person's life than it used to.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But we're still not planning on like having kids. So that is a thing that it is like, okay, a little bit subversive. I don't know. But
I want to answer at least one question. Okay.
We will. I know.
Okay. So why don't we take a quick break and when we get back, we're going to answer your advice questions.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Dear listeners, hello! Andy here again with an ad read. Wait, Andy, not Naomi, is doing this? You might be asking yourself. And I'm going to tell you why, because today I'm talking to you about Storyworth. If your parents, if your family are anything like mine, they are wonderful people. But also they are, maybe, a bit repressed. And not really forthcoming with details about their lives, their feelings. You know, they're just tight-lipped about everything except the weather or what's for dinner. And that's why I love Storyworth. Over the course of a year, every week, Storyworth emails your loved ones a thought-provoking question. Things like, what were your next-door neighbors like when you were a child? What would you change about your childhood? Did you have a favorite teacher in middle school? What made them great? Questions that could really allow you to get to know them, and in a manner that might get these folks in your life to actually open up. So they get these questions, they email back their response, you get a copy so that there's something exciting in your inbox besides 300 emails from a restaurant you went to once in 2015, yes, I'm talking about myself mostly, and then after a year, Storyworth compiles all of those stories into a beautiful keepsake hardcover book. I mean, Mother's Day is coming up, and my mom, famously difficult to shop for, but with Storyworth, I can learn something about her besides her favorite food. I mean, crab cakes, I know that, but I really didn't know much else about my mom, which is why Storyworth is ideal. And then, when she gets that hardcover book, like a tailored to her autobiography, hoo boy, gotta tell ya, parents love personalized books. It's a fact. So, give all the moms, in quotes, in your life a unique, heartfelt gift you'll all cherish for years. Storyworth. Right now, save $10 on your first purchase when you go to storyworth.com/couples. That's storyworth.com/couples to save $10 on your first purchase.
And we're back with Emily Heller here to help you handle your scandal. Do you hear Mabel scratching on the floor in the background, you guys? Sometimes people think it's maracas. It's never maracas. It's always Mabel.
There is no one with maracas hanging out.
Let's Occam's razor this. Is it more likely that Naomi and Andy have invited a third person into their home to provide instrumentation? Or is it more likely that it is the dog?
It is Mabel trying to dig a hole in the wood laminate. Emily, would you like... Well, I think this is a good one, based on what we've talked about. This is a good one to answer. So,
oh, okay, yeah.
Oh, wait, first, Naomi, what's the phone number to call in?
Okay, you guys, you know we love voicemails, and I'm going to remind you, 3-minute limit. You got to give me a log line and a pronoun up top. Don't you get cut off before you get to the good stuff. 323-524-7839.
All right, here we go.
Hello, Andy, Naomi, animals, lovely guest. My pronouns are she, her, and my tagline is, how do I tell this girl she's a messy bitch and I'm not interested in her shenanigans? I was delighted by your request for petty stuff. I was like, I got one. So here it is. I am a fitness instructor at a gym in New York, and we have, we all cover each other. If you need a sub, there's a whole process. And a few years ago, I needed a long-term cover for something. And my manager asked this woman who was a new teacher at the time. She started covering my classes, and we developed a little bit of a friendship. Like, we would just check in. Meanwhile, we frequently don't even see each other because we're never teaching classes at the same time. We're all over the place. But anyway, just like by text and voice memo, I developed a friendship with this person. And she has become so crazy. I'm sure she was like that the whole time. I just didn't notice. To the point where, like, I now have a folder of screenshots on my phone called crazy, insert name here, just in case I ever need to prove anything. For example, she told me once that, like, she went in to cover a class. Someone said, are you the sub? Which happens all the time, you know, if their regular teacher isn't there. And the answer is, it should just be yes. And she was like, I was like, no, my name is blah, blah. And I'm not a sub. I'm teaching this class. And then, like, got upset about it to the point where I had to have her cover for something. And I was like, if one of my students asks you if you're the sub, please just say yes. Like, I want everyone to feel respected. Also, she told me, like, during the winter when people were sick, like, I have RSV, but I'm going to teach anyway. And I was like, maybe don't do that. And then she got mad at me for responding to exactly what she said. Like, she'll type something out. I'll respond to exactly what she said. And then she'll be like, no, that's not what I meant. Anyway, she's nuts. She's constantly texting. I can't take it anymore. And tell me what to do. That's 3 minutes. Bye-bye.
I got tuberculosis. Don't worry. I'm going to go in. I'm going to teach anyway. I was like, no, please don't. Go to a hospital.
Oh, boy.
Wow.
I feel like I've been in this situation, not with people I work with, thankfully, because that complicates it. Because I'm usually just a fan of being like, I would like to step back. And if you are not okay with that, that's okay because I just won't respond. Or like sometimes saying like, I have been very, very direct about this before. Just being like, when someone is like either like oversharing or like trying to draw me in with that stuff, I will say like, I am stepping back. Please don't respond to this. I will not read it.
Wow. Okay. Shutting it down.
Which is just like, yeah.
Put that in the drawer, Mom. Print that out. Put that in the drawer of my children's accomplishments because that's amazing.
Yeah. That is like, that might be the most, you might be the guest who has drawn the strongest boundaries and stuck to them.
Because I'm like, wow, that's very good.
Yeah. I mean, the thing about saying I will not read what you send me after this, it kind of empties out certain people's toolboxes. Because there are people who have ways of, like, no matter how much you have indicated that you're not interested in whatever drama they are trying to bring to you, like, they don't know how to handle that. Like, they can't be like, I am, you know, going to do something bad to myself, which is, you know, sometimes something people will say disingenuously to get you to engage with them again, or like, do something vague, or I don't know, just like a lot of the manipulation tactics of people who will try and like draw you into their drama. Like, if you say, I'm not going to read the next thing you send me, like, that's right. It. That's game over.
That might be it.
Well, I think especially because with this person, because it's like, okay, you work together, but as you said, because the very nature is that they cover you, that means you guys don't work at the same time, which is good because it means you don't have to deal with this in person, really. But you say you're getting these texts, and so I think
texts
are
the issue.
And so I think that's why that makes sense, where it's like, if you don't want to be as hard line as I will not respond to the next thing you tell me. If that feels too much, or, you know, you could also just be like, I can't have this conversation via text with you, and just kind of like, cause like when someone's trying to get you into a back and forth, that's another thing too, sometimes where it's like, sometimes what will be a day of text messages could be a 7-minute conversation that doesn't have half as much venom when you actually have to like deal with the person in like the immediacy of it.
And when you're not, like, reading it in a tone of voice that they did not use.
Yes. Well, exactly. That's what I mean. Because, like, the venom comes out. Like, when you actually have to hear someone's voice on the other end and you have to, like, respond to them immediately.
Yeah.
It usually is less crazy.
I think the issue here, though, is that, like, if this is someone who she still needs something from and, like, they need to still have, like, a cooperative relationship, it's hard to draw boundaries with someone who you think might not take that
right.
well.
Right.
Yeah.
But she says there's a whole system for getting a cover. So my question is the system for getting a cover you text a person, or is it you like put something out to the office message board or the group chat or the whatever?
Or you fill in a thing.
Yeah,
like
and somebody.
And it just automatically populates it. Like,
do you have to interact with her just to get a cover?
Can you de-preference this person so that they don't choose her for covering your classes?
It sounds like if it led them to text in the first place, it might not have been possible to do it that way. But I do think like saying like, hey, I think I would like to keep our relationship professional is a way of communicating diplomatically what you want to happen, which is that like it's you need to step back.
Mm-hmm.
But it's hard when you don't trust that they will like respond reasonably. Like that's just it's just like what do you do? Who knows?
Yeah, there's
you also have to be emotionally okay with saying that.
And
like that
not responding makes me reasonably.
Like imagining saying that to someone makes me curl up like a cockroach.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Like that. So I go with here's Andy's patented non-confrontational way of getting out of this is frame her. Always frame her, get her fired.
Frame
That's
her for
always
something.
The suggestion I will make because it's non-confrontational. And you, and if you can morally live with it, I couldn't personally morally live with it. I would quit myself. I would do whatever I could to get out of this situation that didn't require me to cross a moral line. Or an emotional line, right? Mm-hmm.
I think the only times when I've been brave enough to actually like draw boundaries like that is when I knew that like if I didn't do it, I would end up closer to the person, and that scared me more than the confrontation.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's the only time when I've like really been like I can pull out the like hard boundaries right now, where I'm like I need to get out of here,
right? Right?
Because I'm in the web. But I do think it's a good idea to also go to your company too before you do anything like that to be like, hey, here's a situation. I feel like I've gotten to become friends with this person and it I don't like the way it's going, and I'm planning on trying to pull back, but I wanted to like let you first of all see if there's any support you can give me in terms of helping me find another cover, but then also just like getting that on record so that if it things
absolutely
go sour,
well I assume look once you're keeping screenshots in a folder you're already in the web, you're already in too deep.
You're like this is not good if you're keeping screenshots
dramatic.
This is not
or you're like this is inevitably going to court and
exactly. It's like, what?
Yeah.
Yeah, when you're in a court-like situation, when you're amassing exhibits for the defense, you have to get away from this person.
That as a culture, many of us have given up caring about communicable diseases, period. But can't you say to someone at Planet Fitness, hey, she's giving dysentery to our clients. That's not good, right?
Yeah. I mean, also saying, like, I have some concerns with how she's interacting with my students, too.
Like, that's better.
To be like, she corrected a student for calling her a sub, which she is.
Right, right. I got like, mad at them. And, like, because I'm assuming that gets back to her. Because in that situation, I'm like, did the student say, hey, the person who subbed for you is a real bitch? Like, is that what happened?
Well, it sounds like she self-reported it. She was like, can you believe that they asked me if I was a sub?
It's like,
and she had to be like, also, it's like, I'm venting to you about this. Like, that also just screams, like, victim complex to be like,
yes.
A person, I took something someone said the absolute least charitable way I could have, and I'm telling you about it.
Right, like, right. That's true. That's
was she
true.
Giving sub energy? Like, did she pull in a TV and a VCR on a big
thing and said, watch this for how to exercise.
We're going to watch Twister. And if you have any questions about tornadoes, write them down so your actual teacher can answer them.
Oh, God. My Lord.
My Lord.
Yeah. So, you know, I think you're right. That's very smart. Like, kind of going through the boss. Again, you're not trying to get this person fired. You just kind of want to be like, hey, get up. Not yet. Don't. Because don't get involved in that with this person.
You say, I want to know what the company's position is on how to handle this situation.
Yes. Perfect. Oh. Perfect phrasing.
Fantastic.
And then
you say, I'm currently dealing with a fucking freak, and I'm wondering what Planet Fitness's official stance is on telling someone to back the fuck off.
Exactly. That's the answer. You'll figure that out.
But I really feel for you because it is a very difficult situation to navigate, and it's something that I was literally just, I mean, like, I don't know how old you are. I'm 38. And I was having dinner with some friends who are younger than me. And one of them was like describing this kind of situation where it was like having that friend who it takes you guys a while to figure out that there's something a little off there. And they're like making a lot of you realize they're at the center of all the drama that's happening. And you start to realize that they don't respect the boundaries of people you love and are being hurtful. And like, you're just like so full of this energy of trying to communicate what this person is doing to you and get validation that like it's not your fault and that you should do something about it, but you feel absolutely trapped. And I was just like, how old are you? And he was like 27. And I was like, oh yeah, of course. Yeah. Welcome to adulthood. You're going to meet like five more of these people in the next 15 years. Yeah. Like
before you know when to walk away, before you know how to walk away early. You got to get out early.
It's such a bad situation. And there's just so many people like that out there. And they're just, they're hurt also. But it's very important to protect yourself.
Yeah. We talk about red flags all the time in relationships, in romantic relationships. We don't talk about them enough in friendships, in work relationships. Yeah.
What are your like red flags for a friendship?
Yeah.
Huh. When somebody gossips to me about somebody early on, meaning like a shared person. So for instance, if we're all in a room and you tell me some shit about somebody when they leave, I immediately know you ain't somebody to be trusted.
See, that is really smart. And I am not good enough at being like, that's a bad sign. I'm always like, ooh, fun.
Oh, no, it's very fun. Like, right? I'm like, ooh, tea. But then I'm like, never tell this person anything about yourself ever.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? Like, I know, but it's like that. Because like, it's different. Like, I'll tell you about a person who, like, you'll never meet or a person who's, like, not close or I won't use a name. But it's like, if we're all interacting, especially I think in workplace is what I get about somebody. And they talk about somebody who's left the room. In a way that's like, even if it's
that's
not
fucked up,
but like, even if it's not like, oh, he walked out, it's like, what is he wearing? It's not that, but like, I don't know. Just
being
don't
like
a little,
you know, something about what's going on in his life right now. And like, or just like, yeah, like there are things where you're like, oh, if you haven't assessed what my relationship with him is before you've said that too, that's like, oh,
well, that in part, but it just also shows if you reveal information to me about somebody else, if you reveal information, because one of the things, like, I'll say stuff, but what something I told myself early, like years ago, don't say anything that you couldn't stand by if somebody calls you out on it.
That's smart.
Don't say anything that somebody, hey, did you say this? And I'd be like, yes, I did. I mean, if you can't say that, don't say it out loud to a room of other people. Don't say it out loud to other people.
You say could be in a Sony leak, right? Pretend
any
third person could find out what you're going to say.
Will it be some screenshots that a woman I work with has kept titled crazy from Naomi? You know what I mean? Could that be a possibility in my
life?
That's
why it all has to be disappearing voice notes.
Well, that's what I do. And there's some people out here who have not updated. Can you update your Apple iPhone settings so that your voice notes automatically delete? You got to go into settings. Because some of y'all are out here and it'll be like, so-and-so kept a voice message from you. And I said, excuse me? That's not why I sent you that.
Yeah.
And she was like, I had to go into my settings. I said, you better learn to go in your damn settings.
Yeah. We're not saints, by the way. I'm just saying that we don't gossip about people who you've just met with other people you've just met. We only talk to, like, longtime friends.
Yeah.
But I also tell you, I will not say anything about somebody that I wouldn't be comfortable telling to their face.
Sure.
Now, there's a
but
difference.
But we also wouldn't say that to, like, a stranger
or to someone we
you know, we just met.
But that's a huge red flag. Now, what's one of your friend or work red flags, Em?
So, for me, I think one thing that has been revealing is just the sort of like immediate enthusiasm and commitment to being my friend that where I'm like, oh, it's not based on enough. Where it's like if they don't know enough about me to make that decision where they're like, I just feel like the people who I've had the worst experiences with have just been like on my jock really hard.
Yeah, they're like, oh, you wrote on Barry? And
not
then they would try to hang out with you.
Before there was any like real public information about me, you know, before I had any shit like that going on, you know what I mean? People who were just like in college, like we just like sat near each other in class and maybe they just knew who else I was friends with and they wanted to be in with my friends or like just I just feel like that's like a part of being someone who makes sort of rash decisions or like maybe is cycling through people too quickly and someone trying to get really close really fast without building there.
Yeah.
That that kind of sets off my alarms.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I actually got one. I thought of one.
Yeah,
I was going to say a dumb one, but then I actually thought of a real one. Someone who asks me too many questions about Naomi and her career.
Oh.
That, to me, is a red flag. Yeah. Not as like, oh, this is your partner, but someone who wants to maybe, who is like using me as a way
like to get closer to her. Yeah.
Yes. And that's happened before. Yeah. And then I've stopped hanging out with those people.
Yeah. And like, that doesn't even necessarily mean that they're crazy. It just means they're not going to be a good friend to you.
Exactly.
It's like not worth being friends with them if that's
exactly.
Especially because it's like, I'm very accessible. So it's like, what are you even doing? Yeah, you like, it's like, what are you like using Andy for?
People, you don't need to hang out with me to hang out with Andy. Okay.
Right.
But no, I get that. Yeah, when someone's like a little too, those are good. I hope the listener, you take all of those. You have to know all of those. When someone's like asking a little too much about other people, you're like, what? And then when someone's really into you really fast, and you're like, you're cycling through. I get that. I get that big time.
Yeah. Emily?
Emily.
Emily.
Yes. Emily.
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 Thank you for taking the time. Thank
we
you
so
for joining
appreciate
us.
It. So thank good to see you and talk to you.
It was so nice to see you.
Can I plug my new podcast?
Absolutely.
You can, sure.
I recently started a, just keeping in the theme with things I want to talk about that make people walk away from me at parties. I recently started a Jeopardy podcast called What Is a Jeopardy Podcast with the Canadian comedian John Cullen. We are a weekly podcast. We are the only comedy podcast about Jeopardy.
What?
Which is wild because it's like one of the most watched shows on TV. I might have to do with the fact that most of the people who watch it are over 60, but they do not listen to as many podcasts. But it's really fun. We started out by covering the recent Tournament of Champions, which was incredibly exciting. Ike Barinholtz competed in the regular Tournament of Champions.
Whoa.
He won the celebrity tournament. He's the first celebrity Jeopardy champion to be invited to compete in the regular Tournament of Champions against the regular nerds. And he won his first game.
What?
John Barinholtz's brother.
Yes.
The son of Jury Duty's own.
Yes.
Judge Barinholtz.
He beat like the third seed in the whole tournament.
What?
It was, or maybe the second. Yeah, it was wild. He did so much better than everyone thought he was going to get smoked. And he did better. But anyway, Jeopardy has been in like extended postseason lots of tournaments, and they just started regular games again, so we're going to be talking about regular games again for the first time on the show. Anyway, if you like Jeopardy, if you're a casual, we have a lot of listeners who don't watch it regularly and still enjoy themselves. We talk about the games, we do deep dives on the Final Jeopardy categories and stuff, and we also read some clickbait articles about what's going on Jeopardy, so I find it pretty enjoyable. If you are a even mild Jeopardy fan, you should check it out.
That's great. So fun. I love it. What days do they drop? What days do the episode drop?
We drop on Tuesdays.
Okay, so same day. Make it a double feature, guys. Make it a double
feature. It comes out Tuesday, talking about the previous week.
Awesome. I love that. Awesome.
Thanks again, Emily.
We'll see you next week, guys.
See you guys.
Bye.